In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Asphanaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief and of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel chapter 1, which is really so much about change and the challenge of change. And that's what I've titled the message today. We're going to look at it by way of application. We will come back and look at some of the historical background and things on Daniel next week. But we're going through a lot of changes in life. We go through changes all the time. Our nation is going through significant change. Even our president ran on the platform of change, and he has a desire to change the face of America. Now, I'll not spend time in the political arena today, but I'll suffice it to say the times, they are a-changing. You know, when I was a kid, I left home. I was 22 years old, kid, you know. I packed my wife, who was pregnant, packed her up in a car, and I was driving across country to Oregon. I was moving. And I remember when I was leaving, you know, my parents and my in-laws were standing at the lawn of my house as I was pulling out of the driveway, and they're crying, and my wife's crying, and I'm like, see ya, hey, you know. Like, it didn't faze me. I'll see you again, no worry, no problem. You know, my wife cried all the way to Ohio. And I remember as we'd be driving, you know, she'd just be sitting there, and all of a sudden she'd start crying. And I'd look over and I'd go, what are you crying for? She'd go, I miss my family. You just saw him yesterday. You know, what's the big deal? But it's really different when it's the kid going. I'll tell you that, for me. Like, I find myself weepy, you know. I mean, I'm a sappy guy all of a sudden. You know, I find myself thinking about this and, you know, just struggling in my heart. Because change, we don't like it. Let's face it. All of us got to face the fact that none of us like change. And when the change is dramatic, when it's someone you love that's moving on, or some big change, a change in you're moving, or, you know, you're getting a new house or a new place, or you're getting married, or you're losing a marriage, or whatever change may be going on, it's very dramatic in our hearts when we're faced with these things. Well, Daniel and his fellows face tremendous change. And as we come to this first chapter of Daniel, we're going to look at it in that light. It tells us there, in that third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Now, this was set up by God. God had told them that they needed to turn away from their idolatry. The children of Israel had been practicing idolatry for years. And God, through Jeremiah and Ezekiel and other prophets, had been warning them and warning them and warning them that if they did not repent and turn away from their idolatry, that they would be judged. And that he would, in fact, allow them to be taken captive. They didn't believe it. They didn't believe for 1 minute that Jerusalem could fall. But yet, it did. And Nebuchadnezzar is the tool in God's hand. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, over to him. And even some of the implements of the temple were brought in. Articles of the house of God. Things like the Ark of the Covenant and other implements were taken to the house of the gods of the Babylonians. One of the reasons that God sent them to Babylon is because they were so into idolatry. And basically, it's like, you want idolatry? I'll give you idolatry. I'm going to send you to the land of idols. They had been, for 490 years, living in the land. They, by the way, were supposed to rest the land 1 year for every 7 years. And they did not do it. And so because of that, God sent them into captivity for 70 years to rest the land for that period of time. It tells us that the king instructed Asphanaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles and young men. Look what it says, that there was no blemish, good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. Notice, first of all, he takes these young men and he changes their location. So here's the first change we see. He moves them from their homes in Jerusalem and he rips them from that comfortable environment and moves them into the land of Babylon. You know, you look at that and you think, well, you know, so what's the big deal? I had to move to Babylon. Listen, this is dramatic. This is similar to what happened to people in the Holocaust, where they were taken captive and they were brought in, and these, of course, were put in concentration camps, ripped from their home life. Imagine if that happened to you right now. You're sitting in your home, you're saying your blessing for your food, and this happened in the Holocaust times. It also happened in Russia during times of persecution. It's happened in China, where you are even just sitting and praying in your home. And suddenly, a knock comes on the door, or they blast through the door, and they take you, and they take your children, and they rip you from your children, and they separate you from your children, and take you into captivity. That's what this was like for them. They couldn't fathom that this could happen to them, but God uses it. God takes them. And as we look at the book of Daniel, this book, part of the theme of this book, although there's lots of different various themes, but the main theme of this book is how God can work in difficult times, how God's sovereign hand is at work in the midst of whatever situation. And the question we need to pose as we look at this book is, can Daniel, can the children of Israel, these young men, can they live in Babylon? Can they live for God in Babylon? And that's the question I want to pose to you today, is can you live in Babylon? You say, wait a minute, Chris, what do you mean? I don't live in Babylon. Oh, yes, you do. And in fact, it's becoming more Babylonian all the time. This world we live in is moving toward a lifestyle very similar to Babylon, a land of idols, a land of immoral behavior that is moving very quickly in this direction, and we need to be prepared for it. Psalm 137 speaks to what was going on in their heart at the time when they were in Babylon. It says this, listen. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hung our harps upon the willows in the midst of it. For there those who carried us away captive asked of us a song. And those who plundered us requested with mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? If I forget, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its skill. These young Jewish men were taken from their homes, ripped from their parents. Did they even perhaps see their parents die, some of them, before their eyes? Did they watch as the city was destroyed, perhaps? Daniel himself would later turn his face toward Jerusalem and pray 3 times, turning his face toward Jerusalem, longing for Jerusalem. What did he remember? No doubt he knew of the stories of old of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He was a young boy when Josiah was on the throne, and during that time there was renewal and revival, and it might have seemed like, well, this is all going to turn around. Imagine what that would be like. Imagine. Things seem to be going along normally, and then all of a sudden your world is turned upside down. Those in the Sudan have experienced this as they had their lives displaced in Darfur and all areas of the Sudan during their persecutions and the wars that have been going on. We have these things happening today, but here we see this change. Imagine if the Lord allowed that to happen in your life. How would that affect you? Would you stand for him if he allowed your location, your place, your home life, your comforts? Listen, we're spoiled, aren't we? We live in a very comfortable society. Everything's very nice for us. You know, we've got our nice homes and our couches and our chairs, our lounge chairs and our big screen TVs and our comfortable cars and warm houses and all those things. What if it was all ripped out from under you? Some of you may even experience something like this, because certainly there are people. I met a lady the other day who told me she lost her home. It's happening to people. But even that, it's not like you're taken into captivity. It's not like you're moved to another country, to another land. And so you have also, not only do you have a change in location, but you have a change in language and more. Look at verse 3 again. The king instructed Asphanez, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men of whom there's no blemish but good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace. Look at the end. Whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. King Nebuchadnezzar sought the cream of the crop, the young upstarts of this batch of captives. And they would be trained in the Chaldean philosophy and language. Chaldeans were the class, the learned class of their day. They were educated in science, math, astronomy, astrology, divination, rituals. These were the smart guys of that day. Sort of the elite, if you would. Here's a question. How do you protect your mind from Babylonian brainwashing? Because that's what's going on here. And the way you protect your mind is by keeping your heart washed, you keep your brain washed. Proverbs 4:23 says, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life." If your heart is right with the Lord, his hand will work for you. And that was Daniel's way. His heart was right. And the thing is, this is not just education of changing their language. This is not just, you know, wanting them to learn a few new things. This isn't an indoctrination that these Chaldeans want to do. Nebuchadnezzar wanted to indoctrinate these young men in the Babylonian way of life. And let me say this to you. They're learning language and culture. They're learning about their gods. And that's exactly what our culture wants to do to us, especially you young people. The culture wants to mold you into their image. They want to conform you to this world. There are courses, for example, in the public schools, elementary age public schools. Heather has two mommies. In our colleges and universities, there are multiple courses taught on the gay agenda to indoctrinate the young people. Listen, if you're a young person here and you're thinking about going away to a secular college, or you're a parent of a young person and you're sending them away to a secular college, get ready to have their eyes pop out, because they will be indoctrinated into a way of thinking to the extent where these professors are even performing immoral acts in front of the students to show them what it is to be and how it is to be promiscuous and even homosexuality. There is an agenda, you guys, and there's an agenda that Hollywood has. There is an agenda to teach you and to train you in their way of thinking. It's an agenda. This new movie they spent, I don't know how much money on, Avatar. They spent all this money on this new movie. I've not seen it. I'm not going to see it. I've heard it was the most boring 3 hours. Someone told me it was the most boring 3 hours of their life. They couldn't wait to get out of there. I know some of you probably saw it. They're like, but it was special effects. And that's how they get you. But there's an agenda in that movie. There's an agenda of the new age and the Mother Earth and, you know, everybody, we're all just one, and we all need to just feel good, and let's hate the military, and, you know, this whole agenda in the movie. And the point is, Hollywood has an agenda. Their agenda is to indoctrinate us into their thinking and to change our minds little by little. And that's what they're trying to do to Daniel in this story. MTV, other TV programs promote immoral relationships. There's an agenda. You know, we get all up in arms sometimes as Christians when we see that Disney does something that's sort of on that edge of something with an agenda. And we think, oh, no, not Disney, not Mickey Mouse, you know. And we get all worked up about that. But, you know, listen, I got news for you. You might not have known this, but Mickey's not a Christian. You know, they're not necessarily godly-minded people. They have a gay day in Disney World. They put aside a special time just for the homosexuals. And I'm not picking, I sound like I am picking on homosexuals today. I don't mean to be. The fact of the matter is that's the strongest agenda that's out there is trying to change. They're trying to change even marriage. In fact, January 1st, New Hampshire is now officially a state where you can get married. Gay marriage is now legal in New Hampshire. And New Jersey is not far behind it. We came very close to it becoming legal in New Jersey in the last couple of years. And they're still working hard to do it. And the fact of the matter is there is an agenda. And Daniel and his friends face the same kind of thing. Babylon has an agenda to change them, and Babylon today, this world, has an agenda to change us, and especially to change young people. And they knew if they could get the hearts of the young people, they could impact the nation. And Satan knows this, and that's why he targets the young people. So we have a change in language, we have a change in location, we have a change in indoctrination, we have a change in diet. Not only did they change these things, but they want to change their diet. It says the king appointed for them, verse 5, a daily provisions of the king's delicacies of wine, which he drank, 3 years of training for them so that they, at the end of that time, they might serve before the king. Imagine giving teenagers, young men, all these delicacies and this freedom to drink wine. Imagine this. I mean, think about you. If when you were a teenager, when I was a teenager, I didn't know the Lord. I didn't have any relationship with the Lord. If they had given me the best wine, I'd been right in line. And it wasn't the cheap stuff either. And, you know, teenage boys, they can eat, man. You think about this. I remember when my son was about 14, 15, 16, he'd bring his friends over. And we never had enough burgers for them. Never. It's like you just keep bringing them out and cooking. Okay, what else we got in the freezer? What else, you know, we got to pull something else out. I mean, it's one friend of his could eat like 5-6 burgers in a sitting. And I'm not talking about like the little McDonald's deals. I'm talking like good-sized things. He'd sit and eat them all with the bread, the everything. I wonder how big he is now. And food and drink can have a lot of influence on us. What we eat, what we drink, how we are, how loose we are with that can have a lot of influence in our life. And of course, in Daniel's day, there were dietary laws that the Jews had. And you can imagine that some of this food was I'm sure, not kosher food. It was, you know, probably pork chops and hot dogs and you know, sausage and probably shrimp and lobster, which we all like that stuff, but that's what they weren't supposed to eat during that time. And listen, we all know, we all struggle with food and drink, don't we? How many of you ate too much over the holidays? You're going on a diet, January. Okay, time to go on the... I'm resolving. My resolution is I'm going to lose 15 pounds, you know. At least you said that January 1st. And my wife makes some incredible stuff at Christmas. I mean, she makes these Christmas cookies called pecan balls that are amazing. And, you know, they're pecans and stuff and all. I don't know how she does it, but whatever it is. And they're got sugar all on them. I only had like 2 this year because I got this diet thing I can't go off of and, you know, so I can't cheat like I used to. But the 2 I had were really good. But we can be controlled by food sometimes. It can rule our lives. And Daniel knew that food was like the first step of compromise. So he took that careful step. And then we see also that there was a name change. It says, verse 6, now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them, the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, Hananiah, Shadrach, and to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. Now, Daniel means, his name means God is judge. Now, in our time now, names don't mean as much. We don't think of names in the same way. But in that time, names had a lot of meaning. And they always chose names that they thought would be prophetic about the child. And so Daniel's name means God is my judge. And they change his name to Belteshazzar, which means Bel is my protector. Bel was one of their false gods, one of the Babylonian gods. And Hananiah means Jehovah is gracious, and it changes that to Shadrach, which means commander. I'm in command by the moon god. So you can see they're shifting them to gods, to ones that they would be honoring them, honoring their gods. They're trying to change their minds about their gods. Mishael, who means who is like God, and that becomes Meshach, which means who is like Aku, which was another of their heathen gods. And Azariah means Jehovah is my helper, and that becomes Abednego, which means the servant of Nego, another heathen god. And so what they're doing here is these Babylonians hoped that they would forget their god and would help them in the Babylonian brainwashing. They're trying to turn them to their gods, calling them by a different name, changing their names. Now, we all have nicknames that we've, grown up with maybe, and you have your name changed and treated in different ways. You might be called Shorty or Freckleface or something like that. My name, McCarrick, I had that last name, McCarrick, and it would always call me Carrot, and sometimes they call me Carrot Head. And then because I have a big head, they would call me Head, just Head sometimes, or Cabbage Head. And then at one time, one guy came up to me and he said to me, you ought to write a book because you got such a big head, you ought to write a book, How to Get Ahead. And, another fellow came to me one time and said, you don't have a forehead, you have a seven head, And of course, those are just names that I get ridiculed about. It's no big deal, they hurt a little bit when people say that. But these names had a greater agenda than that. These names had an agenda to change them from the gods they were following. Their goal was to get them to change gods. That's what they wanted them to do. Don't worship the God of your fathers any longer. Don't follow the faith of your fathers, but we want you to follow the faith of the Babylonians. And that's the goal of the enemy today. That is the goal of Satan and his minions. That is the goal of this world, to get you to follow the gods of this world, the God of mammon, the God of pleasure, entertainment. Look at the size and the magnitude of the entertainment industry today. These are the gods of this world that are trying to suck us in. And the goal of the enemy is to get you to this place and to get young people to compromise and give up the faith of your fathers. If you're a father here today, we are called to be priests of our homes. We have a responsibility to lead our families, to train them up in the way of the Lord. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart, Proverbs 22 says. And young people, listen, you might gripe and complain because you have a Christian parents. You might not like it. You're always telling me what to do, all these rules. None of my other friends have those rules. They get to do whatever they want. Why don't you just leave me alone and let me do whatever I want? Listen, you ought to repent right here and now, and you ought to thank God that you have Christian parents. Just thank the Lord that God has given you parents who love you and who will train you and who will minister to you. Daniel was a young man who apparently, whether it was his parents or his culture or whether he had a priest or someone he knew, but clearly and apparently he had conviction. Look what verse 8 says. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's portion of the food. But Daniel. I'm so glad there's a but Daniel in this text. I'm so thankful that there is this text that says that Daniel purposed and he resolved and he stood. Because, desire is way more powerful than intellect. You can think a certain way, but your desires will lead you. Somehow, this young man, 14 years old, we believe, decided that though they may take his name, and though they may try to make him eat their food, and though they may change his language and move him from his home life and transport him into a new place. At 14 years old, this young man decided, I'm going to obey God. I'm going to walk with God. I'm going to stand. I'm going to face the challenge of change, and I'm going to face it in the Lord. He purposed in his heart. He resolved in his heart. You want to make a resolution this year? Make the resolution to follow the Lord in 2010. He said, I'll not be defiled. He made that decision, by the way, long before he faced this. He didn't make this decision when they brought the delicacies out. He didn't wait for the delicacies to be put before him, and then he decided, gee, I wonder. It was like Joseph. When Joseph was faced with the temptation with Potiphar's wife, Joseph didn't make the decision at that moment to not be with this woman. He had already made the decision that he was not going to live that way. He had already made the decision that he was going to stay pure. And Daniel did the same. You see, folks, we need to make the decision before the temptation comes. Because I guarantee you the temptation is going to come. Guaranteed. We are going to face the temptations of the king's delicacies. Or perhaps it will be a moral issue. Whatever it may be in your life, you will face the temptation. And the question is, what will we do when we face that temptation? Daniel purposed in his heart. Battles are won and lost, listen, in the heart. They're won and lost in the heart, or we might say it a different way, in the will. And you need to give your will to God. He made the choice to obey. The heart will always, listen, the heart will always make a convert of the mind. Always. If you give your heart to someone or something that is not good for you, it is very difficult to break away from that thing. And that can be a bad thing. But on the contrast to that, if you give your heart to something good, you give your heart to the Lord, it also is the thing that will control your life. It will direct your life. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. And lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. You see, decisions that we make must be purposed in our heart. The world wants to conform you, but the word of God will transform you. As believers, you know, if you are alone with unbelievers, will you stand? If it's just you and a group of unbelievers, and let's say you go to a restaurant and everyone orders drinks, do you give in and order a drink because the peer pressure comes to you and figure, well, I got to be like everybody else? Let your convictions confront your culture. Listen, guys, here's the answer. It is possible to serve God in Babylon. And we need to serve God in Babylon because we live in Babylon. And Daniel didn't only learn how to live in Babylon, but he learned how to flourish in Babylon. Daniel gets raised up and becomes the right-hand man to Nebuchadnezzar. He isn't just like skating through. He doesn't just like get by. He ends up being the guy in charge of so many things. The one who's honored, raised up in leadership. And I want to dare you guys today, every one of us, I want to dare us to be Daniels. To stand. Joseph did it. Daniel did it. Esther did it. What area of your life would you call Babylon that you've been called to serve in? In other words, which area of your life do you need to give over and say, you know what? God wants me to stand in this area of my life against Babylon. It goes on to tell us in verses 10 to 13 that the chief eunuch was afraid. It tells us there that he feared that he would be getting in trouble for allowing Daniel to eat this food. So Daniel says to him in verse 11 or 12, he says, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. And let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young man who eat the portion of the king's delicacies as you see fit. So deal with your servants. What does Daniel do here? You know what he does? He challenges Babylon. He says, you know what? My God's greater than this. He didn't say that to the guy, but this is what's in his heart, I believe. My God's greater than this circumstance. God can deal with this. Will you try the Lord's way? That's really what Daniel's doing. He's saying, I can test this. I'm going to put this out there and test it. And he trusted the Lord to provide a way for him. Here's the question. Will you challenge Babylon in 2010? Will you do that? And in what area does God want you to challenge Babylon? What area is the world creeping in your life? Is it in materialism? Is it in some moral area of your life that God wants to challenge us to obey him and do it his way? See, we need to realize something. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13 says this, listen, no temptation has overtaken you except which is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. You see, you'll be facing temptation. The question is, what will you do with that temptation? There is no temptation that will come your way except which is common to man. And God will give you a way of escape. And that's what God gave Daniel, because Daniel challenges it, he tests this, and they let him eat the food he wants, and they look better, and they're 10 times smarter than anybody else. We'll cover that in detail next week. God will move in a situation if you'll trust him. When I was in the business world, I worked for an insurance firm. And when I first went to work for them, they had these trade shows that they would do with electricians and plumbers and various groups. And they told us we had to go to these trade shows. They were usually held in Atlantic City. And we had to go to these trade shows, and we had to stand at this booth, and people would come around and talk to you, and you know, you're a pickup leads that way was the idea. The only problem is, I didn't mind doing that. I didn't mind standing and talking to people at the trade show. I didn't even mind going to Atlantic City. It wasn't my favorite place to go. But I'd go, okay, I'll do that. Except that they said we had to stand there and serve beer. They had beer, big beer kegs, and we would just slop beer and give them beer all day long. And when my boss told me that, I said, I'm sorry, but I'm not a beer bar. I'm not serving beer. I'm not doing that. And he said, well, it's part of your job. You have to do it. I said, well, look, I'm sorry, but I didn't sign up to serve beer. I signed up to sell insurance. I'm not here to serve beer. I'm not going to do it. I can't do this. And he said, well, you have to at least go to the booth and be by the booth. And I said, well, I don't even want to do that. And I said, anyway, let me ask you this question. I said, is it really good for an insurance firm to be handing out beer to guys who, first of all, it's not good for their health. It makes them fat. And then on top of that, they're going to get in a car and drive and they might kill somebody. And we're an insurance agency and we're doing this. Does this make sense to you? And he said, well, it's just something we've always done. I said, well, maybe we ought to do something else. And you know, through that whole thing, they changed the whole program. They started doing cholesterol screening instead. And you know, we had bigger lines for the cholesterol screening than we used to get for the beer. Because everybody wanted to make sure they're healthy, I guess. And the point is that I stood. Now, there's nothing great in me. I didn't do anything great by doing this. I just had a conviction that I didn't want to slop beer. I didn't want to smell like beer. I didn't want to go home and have to explain to my wife why I smell like beer. You know, I just wanted to make a stand. I believed the Lord wanted me to make a stand. And I made that stand, and God honored it, and God used it. Now, that might be a kind of a funny, small story, but the fact of the matter is, when you stand for the Lord makes a way for you. It says, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with food or drink. He wanted to stay pure. You see, this food that he was facing may have been sacrificed to idols also. We know that it was probably unclean. But the point is that Daniel viewed eating the food as the first step toward compromise. And you might say, well, what's the big deal? It's only food. Well, that's the problem. You might say, what's the big deal? It's only one drink. What's the big deal? It's only one movie or show or music or whatever the thing is that is Babylonian around you. And we all have Babylon all around us. What's the big deal? It's only one peek. It's only one look at this thing. What's the big deal? What's the big deal? It's only one little flirtation with this person at work. I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm not going to end up in an affair. I'm not going to go do those things. I'm just flirting. We're just playing around. Yeah? As a pastor, I could tell you many, many stories of those who stepped in that direction. They were just playing around. They were just having fun. And the next thing you know, they're in an immoral relationship. No one goes into those things saying, gee, one morning they wake up and say, gee, I think I'll go have an affair on my wife. Or, gee, I think I'll become a drunk. No one does that. Gee, I think I'll become a drug addict. Nobody sits down and says, I want to become a drug addict. I want to become these things. It happens little by little. It happens with little steps of compromise. It's small decisions. It's small choices. No guy gets sucked into pornography because he suddenly finds that the internet's working and he goes and just follows it. Nobody does that. It's one little peek. It's one little look. It's one little beginning. And it's that thing that creeps into our heart. And Daniel would not take even that one step. He wouldn't eat one shrimp, not one bite of that hot dog, because he knew. Because he had a conviction that he purposed in his heart. Jesus said, if any man desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Daniel wanted to obey God, and God made a way for him to do that. And if you want to obey God, if you want to follow God in your life, God will make a way for you to do that. I have young couples who come to me, and they are living together, and they say, there's no way for us to separate. We're living together. We have to stay together. We're living together. We know it's wrong. We're Christians. We need to get married. We want to get married. Our wedding is in 6 months, and I say to them, separate. And I've had some of them walk out the door and say to me, I can't do that. We're not going to do that, and you're legalistic. But I know if they would have said, you know what, I trust the Lord. I believe in God's way, and I'll do it God's way. And when they do it God's way, I've seen it where God provides. God provides a place for people to live. God provides all those things if you say you will obey the Lord. You'll obey the Lord. So would you purpose in your heart to not defile yourself with Babylon, with the world? Whether it's immorality, materialism, whatever applies in your life, you each know what it is. I'm not going to ask you what yours is. You don't ask what mine is between you and the Lord. But a challenge to go against Babylon this year. Obey God, and he'll make a way for us. Purpose in our hearts. Take a step of faith.